This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
At the weekend, we were told that the president would be inaugurated on the 19th of June. That is tomorrow. And the first thing I thought to myself is, gosh, did they already know the date? How are they going to get all these people to come in? How are they going to manage it? All these heads of state who need to attend, how are they going to coordinate it? Who's going to be at the airport to receive them? What is the security going to look like? And then we see all these notifications that are already coming out already from the government that are saying if you live within the precinct of the Union Building, so if you live in that part of Pretoria, I think perhaps within a 5 kilometer radius, you're going to need a special permit to go to your office, to go to work. Those roads have already been closed off. For those who would be attending, I think it is a public event, you'd have to park your cars at the Pretoria showgrounds and then be shuttled in and out. So it is a whole operation. And then the inauguration itself, we've witnessed quite a few now in this 30 years of democracy. It has a lot of fanfare, bells and whistles in it, right? So there's going to be a way in which the dignitaries walk in. There's a placing where they are seated. There's a chief justice involved, and he'll be wearing all his, you know, judicial regalia, that olive robe and collars and belts and all those kinds of things. And then there's going to be a gun salute, and then the military are going to have a parade, then the Air Force are going to do a display, and then the police, and there'll be a cavalry, and it's going to be a whole affair to just, what shall we say, demonstrate the prowess of this Republic of South Africa. And so who coordinates it? How do you project manage a big party like that? And so we thought, you know what, why don't we speak to somebody who's done it many, many times? We know him as the director of Risk Recon and former ambassador of South Africa to Kenya and Portugal. But actually, in his younger days, he was the chief of state protocol for no less a president than President Mandela himself and President Mbeki. So, Dr. Kingsley Makubela, good morning.
Good morning, Lerato. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Always a pleasure talking to you. So we're taking you back to those days, long, long back, where you would have been running around today. Would it be like a headless chicken or just running around?
You know, the logistic of the presidential inauguration is always a very big nightmare. What we've done in the past is as soon as the election dates are known, the president will set the inauguration of whoever is coming in and will start to send invitations at that time to attend the inauguration, understanding that heads of state have a very busy schedule. To ensure maximum attendance, you find that we send invitations like 3 months in advance to all heads of state. Without mentioning who is being inaugurated, we just talk about the presidential inauguration. And those letters will go out in the name of the president, the sitting president. But then the logistic then begins. Coordination with everyone, the incoming heads of state, their security requirements, with the police who do their threat assessment of individual heads of state. It's a huge nightmare. I really don't envy anyone who gets involved in that. But you work out to the precision that the military require for the fly pass.
Wow.
Why the fly pass, Lerato? It's not basically to showcase. It's actually for the president as a commander-in-chief to take a salute from his troops. It's a ceremonial event that the commander takes a salute, and the military recognizes that. That's why you see there's a military, there's a police involved in that inauguration, because the president is literally the appointing authority for those security entities.
I see. Okay, you've mentioned many, many things. So let's just start at the beginning. You say nightmare. Some would say huge endeavor, which I think you've done to aplomb, because there's been no incidents or negative incidents at a presidential inauguration in South Africa. And so we shouldn't be expecting anything untoward tomorrow. So let's start off with the dignitaries arriving. You say the minute the election date is announced, you send out invitations regardless of the fact that you do not know the outcome of the election. The fact is, the state, the Republic of South Africa, will have a president elected by the people after the election. So it doesn't really matter who's being inaugurated, but you're making preparation for the head of state. And this reminds us of that principle of civil service, is that you work for the flag, you work for the constitution, you don't work for an individual. So it doesn't matter who's being inaugurated. That preparation must happen regardless.
Absolutely. But remember, this is a state function, the inauguration of the president. It is the function of the sitting president would oversee the inauguration of the incoming president. What we tried to do in the past was to work with the president to set predetermined dates and work backwards, that the elections are on this date. Within this date, the Electoral Commission must make pronouncements. Within this date, there must be election in parliament. The president must be elected within this date. The president must take his oath of office. And we'll work around those timelines and understanding that those timelines are sacrosanct to allow better attendance, particularly for the inauguration. And then we'll start to really send invitations. Rather, the challenge then, there are things that are behind the scenes that people would not know. I mean, I remember when we were doing this inauguration, Gaddafi came with his truck to jam the communication system around the Union Building. I think we inaugurated President Mbeki. And we had to locate this truck and remove it because we spent the whole night going through the drills about what's going to happen to the last second. And I'm happy that throughout those times, we've worked to the second. The flypast flies at a particular time. You recall that the Imbongi got taken away at one stage.
Yes.
Kept on doing. I had to carry the Imbongi off the stage for the inauguration of the president because the flypast was coming. The president must turn around to go and take salute.
Right. Okay.
So people don't understand those kind of intricacies and the details that are involved in the planning. And I have a great deal of respect for people who are doing this, from the police, from the military, protocol people, even politicians, to be there on time.
For a change. Okay, so the timelines are sacrosanct, and you meant around the election. And so this is probably why, from the moment the election results were announced on the 2nd of June, there was frenetic energy to make sure that some kind of a government of national unity is assembled so that the first sitting of parliament, which legally should happen within a 14-day period, takes place. That's what you mean by things are sacrosanct. They are just some issues that are non-negotiable when we're dealing with constitutional protocols, is it?
Absolutely. They are included in the constitution. And we tried to look around the best models around the world.
All right.
You would know, Larato, that at the White House, the inauguration of the new president, the incoming president and the outgoing president, at a particular time, I think it's 1 o'clock, he must leave the White House, and he leaves through, I think, the West Wing, through the gate. Mm. And the incoming president walks in the White House a minute later.
Sure.
So you don't have two bulls in the same crawl. So it's predetermined. It's known ahead of time that it must happen.
Okay.
We try to infect that, and that's why we worked around the amphitheater, the state, at the Union Building. But, last inauguration happened at the stadium. It creates a logistical nightmare because you need to have predictability of the process.
Yeah.
You go to the Red Square for the 9th of May celebration. At a particular time, the clock will ring and this would happen.
Yeah.
It happens the same time. It happened the same at the same time. The level of precision is unprecedented. Okay. So we try to infuse that in state institutions.
Okay. And not just for professionalism. It's also, from what I'm hearing you say, so that there's no vacuum. There's never a constitutional vacuum from one administration to another administration.
Absolutely. Remember, once the president is inaugurated, Larato, he must appoint his executive.
Mm.
Once he's been inaugurated, all those ceases to be ministers. As soon as he takes oath of office, they are no ministers.
Sure.
So the DGs are essentially the ones that are responsible. What has happened in the past, the incoming president would then set up his cabinet and make announcement by at least 12 o'clock the following day.
Mm.
In this case, you would expect on the 10th the president would make announcement. But previously, we've seen President Zuma who would take long to announce his cabinet, and sometimes it's taken more than a day.
Mm.
and you have that kind of a vacuum, you don't need a vacuum in a state institution.
Right.
You know, as soon as the other one walks in, the other one must come
right.
in. So the president, from his inauguration till the appointment of his cabinet, will be having right. enormous powers. He's responsible literally for everything of the state.
Right. Okay. And so today, what do we call him? Because he's still technically the president, but he's also the president-elect after that parliamentary process. So
he's still the president until somebody takes over. If it was a totally different president, that president would be president-elect. The sitting president will still be president until the other one is inaugurated.
Uh-huh.
As soon as the other one says, I so-and-so take, that one ceases to be president at that time.
Wow.
So this one will be a president until he takes a new oath of office. So
okay.
there won't be any vacuum in between.
Okay, until he leaves through the West Wing, etc. I'm going to divert a little bit and say something that I've heard. I don't know if it's true, but they say that in some countries, the president and the vice president never travel on the same aircraft. So that if ever there's a tragedy, you don't have a constitutional vacuum. You don't have two, the number one and the number two citizens that would pass on the same day. So those issues of a power vacuum are constitutionally imperative. And these are some of the things you're trying to address here.
It's actually a norm around the world. I recall when I was in Kenya too, the vice president passed away, Wamala. And I was given a lift to the funeral of the vice president. In the presidential plane. I was a bit taken back to see a lot of ministers packed in the same plane. I actually had to intervene and speak to some of the guys who are very good friends of mine to say, this you can't do. Because if anything happens to these planes, you are in a serious crisis. So it's essentially to avoid a crisis that you avoid the main three people in our case, the president, the deputy president, and the speaker of the National Assembly getting into the same plane. It shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Because if anything happens, the vice president should take in for a time.
Exactly.
If anything happens, the speaker takes over. Those are the rules. Okay. So let's go back now to state protocol. You said an interesting thing is that you're managing time. Also, because by a certain time, the new president must be inaugurated, the new administration must begin. So you can't afford mbongis going on with poetry for too long. It eats into that time. So there's a time management issue. And then there's a security management issue. And that's on the South African side. But the foreign dignitaries also have their own requirements. And this is why you gave us the example of Muammar Gaddafi. So how are you managing the requests, the riders of the foreign guests?
Fortunately, Lerato, in the past, we've had the privilege of being loaned cars by big companies, BMW, Mercedes. They've loaned us their most expensive cars for the inauguration. Of course, the marketing time for them to showcase what they have. Included in that actually is Audi. They used to be graciously doing that. But our security will then get involved in detailed security arrangement, working out the precision. Chief of Protocol will be standing behind the amphitheater. At that time, you've worked out the order of precedent, meaning that the one who's the president, like for instance, take Southern Africa, the president of Namibia will be the most junior of all of them. He would arrive late.
Oh.
The king is always the most senior. It doesn't matter when they assume office. It's always the most senior and arrives late and so on. So you work out the order of precedence in terms of the sitting. Everything must be worked out to the details. That's why there was an incident at one stage, Lerato, you recall. Mm. The program director got excited when was announced to one head of state. And later on, President Dos Santos was coming. He was not introduced in the same manner. And people the president took an umbrage about that. After the inauguration, Dos Santos left. That's why the first trip of Nkwana Maidi was to go to Angola to go and try to really patch the relation. So there are certain things that you must not do. It must be scripted, the event, so that the program director doesn't get too excited. Works according to the script, and you work it in terms of the details to the minutes. Because if the program director takes long to introduce people, you're going to have a problem. Running behind with a minute is a huge problem for the Air Force. Remember, these planes are taking off at a particular time, and this is what must happen.
Yeah.
So those kind of details are really essential.
Right. Okay. And so so the tone also matters so that you're not offending any foreign dignitaries. So if you had somebody like myself who's very energetic, I'd be told, keep it together so that you're not offending the Cubans by introducing the British, or just manage yourself. It's very important
keep that energy at the same level. We need it. Keep it at the same level. Don't go down and go up, get excited.
Because it can be misconstrued, yeah?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Because body language and communication means a lot in diplomacy.
Okay, so oh God, that just sounds so difficult. Okay, and then the time management matters, because the time at which there's the flight path by the military, the new commander-in-chief, that's one of his first orders of duty, is to salute his troops. So you can't have, you know, you can't have a musician going on forever, because he is now the commander-in-chief, and his troops have to, what?
Respect him. You must take salute.
Okay, but it's not an allegiance, is it? Because the troops have an allegiance to the Constitution, not to the man.
No, he's their commander-in-chief. Remember, as the president coming, he's their commander-in-chief.
Okay.
When he takes salute. So it's a recognition that we are actually saluting our commander-in-chief. And if the commander-in-chief doesn't take salute, it would be regarded as a serious snub. It would appear as if he's not in command of those troops.
Whoa. Okay. All right. And then all those displays we see the Air Force doing, is that just kind of fanfare to bring, you know, some kind of a magic to the event? Or that's something to do with what's going on?
It's different units. You get the Army, you get the Air Force, you get the Navy. If it was in Cape Town, you see the Navy, but you see the Navy also, they're involved in the parade. The president would take the salute, so you'd have all forces involved. And that's why you see the Air Force. They would come to showcase and salute him. They are essentially saluting. You see helicopters flying with a flag, you know, that they're saluting their commander-in-chief.
Okay. All right. Now, is there a dress code for an inauguration?
The dress code, it's usually a very formal dress code, dark suits that people would wear at this event. And you see, people don't understand. You hear people saying formal, saying casual. Not at a state function like that. At a state function like that, you wear a dark suit.
Mm.
And because it's cold now, ladies will be encouraged to wear long dresses, because you'd have events where you wear short dresses for cocktails and so on. Mm. So there's a dress code.
Yeah.
It will be cold, but dark suits for men.
And some of the things in my early journalism days, believe it or not, I learned this at the SABC. Please wear what you want to wear. It's your personality. But recognize that you're broadcasting to a diverse audience. Religiously conservative, culturally conservative, some liberal. So the best thing to do is always have your shoulders covered and keep the dress below the knee. That way you don't offend anyone. And is it the same sort of rules?
It's the same sort of rules for this kind of event. Is that you are on a neutral basis. And also, as a broadcaster, that you like to be dignified, being seen around the world, different parts of the world, where actually if you are shown in Saudi Arabia, they will not put a blank thing to cover certain parts of your body.
Yeah.
So those are things that individuals, manage much better. But the dress code for any event is the most important thing. That's why they are saying in diplomacy, how you dress is how you are perceived.
No, and this is why I'm mentioning it, because the audience at an inauguration, you've got heads of state from religiously conservative states, you've got them coming from African states, you've got the multi-layered South African cultural community. So if you just observe a few things about the length of dress, length of sleeve, then you're safe, regardless of whose hand you're going to shake.
Absolutely. Having said that, you have traditional dress codes that are also used at this event are entirely accepted.
Okay. All right. And then in terms of, you know, the legal part of this process, how does it work? There's a chief justice. He has to be there. And there are words that are spoken. And there is a hand that's lifted up. And I'm not sure if there's a Bible or a religious tool, but there's that aspect as well.
It's the Bible that is usually used for swearing in the president, unless if a president wants not to take an oath, would like to take an affirmation. So that's accommodated. It would depend on the sitting president. We may as well one time have a Muslim president who goes in there. We'd have a Quran that would be used to swear in the president, because we are a multi-religious country. Yeah. So that's what would happen. But that's scripted, and the president had to practice reading that. And we looked at the speed at reading so that it finishes within a particular time. So there are a lot of rehearsals that are going on as we are talking now.
Okay. So the Constitution prescribes that the president, after being elected in Parliament, must be inaugurated within 5 days of that election. So hence the date tomorrow. Those proceedings must begin formally by 11 and be concluded by noon. And hence all these issues you're explaining about flight paths, etc., because 1 minute past starts to create a constitutional vacuum. And then there's the cultural aspects of, well, as to how you recognize the makeup of the country, so the interministerial, so the interfaith communities, the cultural aspects, and then there's the managing of the security of foreign dignitaries. What about the food that's served afterwards? Does that also have to comply?
There's usually a state lunch one that is hosted, because other heads of state would immediately leave after the inauguration. But the biggest thing tomorrow after the inauguration of the president, you must look at faces of politicians, how insecure they are. They all don't know who's going to be a minister. And the rumors will start to circulate, who's the minister, who's in, who's out.
Yeah.
You recall the famous thing by President Becky when people said, well, it leaked out, this is going to be a minister of so-and-so. He said, if there's any leak, it must have come from his head. There's no one who knows who is going to appoint. So you're going to see that uncertainty now is even worse with the ANC having lost its one seat.
Mm.
So still I want to be checking if they are in, they are not, are they called.
Yeah.
The chief of probe so-called becomes the most important person. You see people starting to phone and say, hey, man, I want to check if they started to call people for consultation.
So
you're going to see a lot of uncertainty. But it's the most exciting period of our democracy to see that going on.
Right. And my final comment, we've come to an end. I love this story was told to me by Velin Gubani, who is one of the owners of Avatar Advertising Agency. And he says, we remember the outgoing president, Nelson Mandela, as he made his way out in a Mercedes-Benz, making way for Thabo Mbeki, the incoming president, in a BMW. And just that alone for marketers was gold, because the BMW said, younger, more exciting guy coming in, older generation leaving the building. So should we also look out for those kinds of things?
No, you know, the presidential fleet, I can confess, it includes both BMW and Mercedes. They are the ones who advanced in terms of the bulletproof. So in the present cavalcade, you find there are BMWs and Mercedes. That's what the president has been doing.
And that's all it is. Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Kingsley Makubela.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, love.
Always great talking to you. It's just such great insights. The director of Risk Recon, he's the former chief of state protocol, and he's explaining to us all the things we're going to be seeing tomorrow. They are deliberate. There's no accident tomorrow. If there's a horse on parade, it was timed. If there's a march on parade by the ceremonial guard, it's timed. A gun salute, it's timed. The wording, it's timed. In fact, the president of the 6th administration, as he prepares to become the president of the 7th administration, is even rehearsing his oath so that it is on time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.